too. We've been following, though, this horrible story of the plane crash in San Francisco that took two lives, nearly 200 people injured in the flight, as the Boeing 777 approaches San Francisco Airport. The investigation is being done as to exactly what happened right now. That has not been officially determined by the National Transportation Safety Board, but lots of people are speculating and putting their best knowledge to work as to what may have happened, given what we know from photographs, from video, from eyewitness accounts. Todd Curtis is with airsafe.com and is an air safety expert and joins us on the program today. Todd, thank you very much for being with us on WGN. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
So what is your take? I know that you know, you've been following this, listening to all of the latest, listening to all the eyewitness accounts. What is your early take? I know it's premature without the official investigation that could take months to complete, but just through your experience, what do you think may have happened here?
Well, for a variety of reasons, possibly not just one, but for several reasons, this aircraft was touching down over 1,000 feet short of where it intended to touch down. And more to the point, because it looks like the tail, very tail end of the aircraft hit first, it very likely was at a higher angle than what usually happens during landing. Because obviously, when an airplane lands, the first thing that touches should be the main landing gear. That was not the case here. This was the very back of the airplane. And as you saw from many of the aerial photos, the horizontal stabilizers and the vertical fin separated very early in the crash sequence. And the aircraft, at that point, it would have been very difficult to control.
So would this be something that would come under the category of human error, pilot error, or are there automated systems that do all of this that may have failed?
Well, although there are automated systems on the aircraft that can allow most of the landing to be done by the aircraft itself, this was a day where it was what they call VFR, visual flight rules. It was a rather clear day in San Francisco. And in fact, many of the pilots who fly in that sort of condition would not be using those automated systems at all. Now, as far as human error, there very well may be human error, but it's difficult to say at this point whether it was the pilots, whether it was the planners who provided information to the pilots or to the flight control computers, or we can even go back to the very design of the aircraft itself. That is, this could be, possibly, one of those very rare instances where there was a confluence of issues that came together that weren't anticipated during the design process. And again, all of these possibilities will be looked at early on. Within a few days or a few weeks, the NTSB will probably narrow it down to something a lot simpler than all the options I just laid out there.
Right. Would the atmospheric conditions have anything to do with this? Although you mentioned that it was a very clear day in San Francisco, I know we've all been on flights where everything seems to be fine, everything seems to be nice and clear, and then you hit some sort of air pocket. I don't know if that's something that would be applicable to the landing of a plane where suddenly just something unexpected in the atmosphere takes place.
Well, certainly there could have been an atmospheric anomaly going on at that time, but we have or will have at least two completely different sets of data. That is, the information from the aircraft itself, from the flight data recorder, information from ground weather stations, as well as inputs from the pilots. That is, the instruments may be saying one thing, but the pilots may have had some sort of experience, some sort of input that wasn't registered by any of those instruments. Fortunately, all the pilots survived, so the NTSB will have a full complement of information to choose from to figure out if anything in the atmosphere, wind, etc., was a factor.
What do you know about this airline and their safety record?
Well, the airline has been in operation for 25 years, and although they've had some incidents in the past, and in fact there have been two previous fatal events, one just 2 years ago involving a cargo aircraft, just two pilots on board were killed, and another one 20 years ago where several dozen were killed, both of those events were in South Korea. In recent years, there's been nothing from the FAA that says that South Korea had any sort of issue with overseeing the airlines in South Korea. And there had been no serious incidents recently in the U.S. or elsewhere that I'm aware of that would point to either the 777 or to Asiana Airlines as having some sort of inherent or serious problem.
Are there safety standards which apply to all airlines or to different countries, different aviation overseeing systems, whatever the equivalent of the FAA would be in other countries? Do they have individual oversight of safety regulations in their airspace?
Well, safety regulation for aviation has several layers, and one layer is within a particular country. Of course, the FAA could set out any set of rules it would see fit for airlines flying inside the United States or flying to and from the United States. There's also an international organization, International Civil Aviation Organization, that has general international regulations that all airlines are advised to follow. But the FAA regulations tend to be much stricter than those international regulations.
So, in other words, if a foreign airline were flying into the U.S., they must abide by the rules and standards and so forth that are set up for the United States?
In most cases, yes. There may be some exceptions, but no exceptions when it comes to really serious safety issues, such as whether or not it should have collision avoidance systems on board, whether or not it should have working instrument landing systems on board, training levels of the pilots. Those rules are very high, regardless of what country is flying into the United States.
Wanted to ask you about this particular aircraft, not this specific aircraft, but the Boeing 777, and just some general questions about air safety. It's been a long time since we've had an airplane crash. I've got a few questions. I'm sure our listeners do too at 312-981-7200. Todd Curtis with airsafe.com, air travel expert. Dean Richards, Sunday morning at 9:19. Talking with air safety expert Todd Curtis, airsafe.com. A terrific website if you have questions about air safety. All things really aviation on the line with us. Todd, I'm curious about the safety track record of the aircraft that's involved, the Boeing 777. I mean, it's been, I believe, over a decade since there's been an airplane crash, correct?
Well, with the 777, there's actually been only one serious crash prior to this. That was in January 2008 in London. And in that case, no one was killed. In the United States, when it comes to large jet transports like the 777, the last time there was an accident involving a very large jet transport was actually November of 2001. And that was in New York a couple of months after 9/11, in fact. And although there have been a couple of regional airline crashes that have killed passengers in the U.S. since then, this has been the longest period in U.S. aviation between crashes of very large jet aircraft.
To what do you attribute that?
It's a combination of things. One, it's lessons learned, because every accident that happens, even if it's outside the U.S., is a learning experience. And design of the aircraft, procedures used by pilots, even emergency procedures are adjusted based on the kinds of lessons that are learned over the years. And the 777, and by the way, I was involved in the development of that. I was with the Safety Engineering Department of Boeing at the time. We looked at issues from Boeing aircraft, from non-Boeing aircraft, and a lot of things about the airplane were changed and required to be changed for other aircraft. For instance, seats were made stronger so they could withstand the impact, the kind of impact you saw yesterday in San Francisco. Fire-blocking materials were required to be put into aircraft cabins so that if there were a fire, it wouldn't spread so quickly. And again, yesterday you saw a situation where most of the cabin was burned away, but people were able to escape the aircraft before the fire consumed that cabin.
Yeah, that was really quite interesting to me as they were showing photographs and video from witnesses, people who were on the ground, seeing this aircraft that was just completely burned up, yet there were only two fatalities. Any fatality is a bad fatality, but considering the scope of this, that there were only two fatalities. And what was even more interesting to me is seeing the photograph of the cabin apparently engulfed in flame, that photo of the orange glow of fire from every window in the plane, and you see people calmly walking away from the aircraft.
And again, that's a testament to also the training of the crews. The cabin crew and the flight crew are drilled repeatedly on what to do in a situation like this, how to evaluate the situation so that they can lead people to safety. For example, if you look at the photographs from that event, you'll see that there are only two slides deployed in that aircraft. There are eight doors in the 777, and during certification, it was required to demonstrate that you could evacuate a completely loaded aircraft in 90 seconds or less using half the doors. And here's a situation where it looks like only a quarter of the doors were fully in use, and they were able to evacuate the entire aircraft.
Yeah, and the reports that I've read are crediting one flight attendant in particular who really kept her calm and really sort of, you know, took charge in getting people off that plane, getting people off the plane to which, and people taking their luggage. So
that's a human nature thing, and I'll tell you, I've looked at a variety of photographs and videos of crashes over the years, including the ditching of the aircraft on the Hudson. And even in that case, I distinctly remember seeing a photo, all those people standing on the wing. There was a gentleman near the end of the wing who had what looked like his briefcase in his hand.
Not
so,
sure.
And I can't say that I wouldn't do the same in a situation, because really, you really don't know how you're going to react to an extremely stressful situation until it happens.
Yeah.
Even if you're well-trained, you won't know until you get there.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, you would... I suppose you would think, I don't know what I would do if the cabin was on fire. I think my reaction would be, I'll get my clothing and my computer. All that stuff can be replaced. I need to get out of here.
And one would hope that one would act that way in that situation. But unless we interviewed that passenger, we really won't know what he or she was thinking at the time.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, it'll be very important to get an interview like that, because this could inform airlines in the future as to how they should brief passengers to make sure that that sort of thing doesn't happen in the future.
Sure. So you can see how people actually react in a situation like that. Here's David on the line at 312-981-7200. Todd Curtis with airsafe.com on the line. David, go right ahead.
Fascinating conversation, Dean. Fascinating. FAA rules apparently don't apply in other countries. I went to Egypt, and we were taking a puddle jumper to Luxor, and when we were walking up to the airplane, I noticed there was duct tape around the wing. And I simply said to the steward, is that FAA standard to have duct tape? I've never seen duct tape on an air wing.
Doesn't exactly scream confidence, though.
No longer in America.
Yeah.
I'm like, so it's okay in other countries to use duct tape?
Yeah.
Well, that's a very important point, because one of the things about aviation is that when it comes to flights within a country, that particular country holds sway over what rules apply. So their equivalent of the FAA in Egypt may indeed allow that to happen. Now, point of fact, there is something called speed tape, which can be used to, it looks like duct tape, literally, but it's actually designed to withstand fairly strong wind. So let's say 100 mile an hour wind going over the wing, where you can put that on an aircraft as a temporary repair. So yes, it doesn't look like something that you would see in the United States, but it may have been, in fact, a safe procedure.
Yeah, it doesn't exactly scream confidence when you're sitting there getting ready to take off. Now, is there anything that the airlines use that look like chewing gum to fill a crack or anything like that? Because that also would scare me if I looked out the window and saw that on the wing.
Well, point of fact, there are some parts of aircraft, depending on the aircraft, which are made from composite materials, which, of course, have adhesives rather than rivets to hold pieces together. So although it may have the appearance of some sort of a temporary chewing gum sort of thing, it's actually, these are well-designed to make two pieces of composite adhere well to each other.
Okay.
So again, if it looks like it may be a little bit suspicious, it's probably something that's been vetted over time, tested thoroughly, and something that's a normal procedure. But again, if you do see something unusual, if you have a chance, take a picture of it, send it to the airline, send it to a media outlet. If you think something looks unusual, make note of it, get some evidence, and share it with the world. So if there is something wrong, we could all learn from it.
Yeah. People tease me all the time because I'm constantly, if I see something or, you know, there's something unusual, I'm constantly, you know, asking a flight attendant, is this normal? Is that normal? You know, I'd like to know about it right at that moment, not when the flight's over.
I agree. That's a reasonable approach to take. It's better to be a little bit on the overboard side when it comes to safety and security than to think, well, this is okay, I'll just let it slide.
Right, right. In general, I think, I fly quite a bit, doing interviews and so forth, so I'm on planes all the time. I think that the airline safety is at an all-time high, and I feel generally pretty comfortable on flights. I wonder if there's anything that passengers should know about airline safety that you think that most people do not know that might put them at ease.
Well, I think one of the important things about airline safety, and it's something that's often forgotten by some passengers I see, is that safety is often in your hands. For example, the event yesterday, from all the reports that came in, passengers were not aware of anything unusual until just before the aircraft hit the seawall. And for passengers who are responsible, one of the responsibilities of a passenger is to be ready for something that happens during takeoff and landing, which means if you're going to drink during the flight, don't get drunk. If you're about to land, pay attention, get your seat back up, put your shoes on in case you have to hurry out of the aircraft. And in general, to be aware of your surroundings, because you may have a situation where you will be the person who is most able to help a fellow passenger, even help one of the crew members get people out of the aircraft.
Well, and yesterday is also a great example of why you should pay attention when the flight begins to the message that nobody pays attention to, that either a video or the flight attendants are giving you, or read the safety card, which is in the pouch in front of you in the event that something happens. Nobody ever pays attention. And yesterday was an example of the people who did pay attention probably were off that plane a little faster than most.
And I'm willing to bet, and we'll probably find this out early in the investigation, that one of the keys to success are decisions made by the cabin crew members. Because one of the things they do in the aftermath of a crash like that is to assess the outside situation, determine which door should be open, because another door may be opening to flames or maybe opening to jagged wreckage. And obviously the two slides that were deployed were successfully deployed, and it was on the side of the aircraft that caught fire last. So I think the cabin crew made some very important, very quick, and very correct decisions yesterday.
I only have about 30 seconds left, but I'm curious, when I get on a plane, where is the safest place to sit on a plane?
It depends on the incident or the accidents you're going to be in. Yesterday's event, as it turns out from looking at the pictures, it seems that the rear of the plane was the part that took considerable damage. So the common wisdom that, oh, the back of the plane is always safest, probably wasn't true yesterday. And again, if you know what kind of crash you're going to be in, I can tell you what part of the aircraft will be the safest to be in.
Generally, is it safest to be in as close as you can be to an emergency exit?
In general, because most of the emergencies that happen are ones where the aircraft is actually fully upright, the wheels are on the ground. That is, you have to do an emergency evacuation. And if you're closer to the emergency exit, obviously you'll be one of the first people out rather than the last, and there's less chance of things going wrong if you're the first one out the plane.
Absolutely fascinating. I could talk to you for two more hours. Todd, I appreciate you taking some time to join us. I know you've been very busy since yesterday. Fantastic information. You can get more at airsafe.com. Airline safety expert Todd Curtis, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you again.
Have a great day. We'll